All right, welcome in everyone to the deep dive. We're going deep today on a case out of Florida. United States fire insurance company VJSUB Inc. This was a 2007 Florida Supreme Court decision. And this really changed how insurance coverage works when it comes to construction defects. And for anyone who's interested in construction law or liability, this is one that you need to know about. So we've got a bunch of stuff to go through today, excerpts from podcasts and a really detailed case brief and a standard case brief. And we're going to kind of break all that down for you, really figure out what's going on here, what the legal principles were in this case, and, you know, why this case is so important, especially when you're talking about CGL policies, commercial general liability policies, and construction projects.
Yeah. You know, at the end of the day, this case really gets to the heart of who's responsible when things go wrong on a project.
Right.
When the sub makes a mistake, who's holding the bag? And when does the insurance company actually have to step up? You know, and it seems like a simple question, but as we'll see, it took the Florida Supreme Court to settle this one.
Yeah.
And the implications are huge for contractors and insurers alike.
Okay, so let's set the stage here. This case involves JSUB. They're a general contractor. They're building homes in Florida. So what happened here?
But basically, after the homes were done, right, handed over to the homeowners, people started noticing some serious problems.
Oh, no.
Yeah, foundations were cracking, walls were splitting, the kind of stuff that gives any homeowner nightmares.
Yeah.
And when they dug into it, it turned out that the subs that JSUB hired, they'd used poorly compacted soil during the build.
Oh.
So this bad soil work, that's what led to all these structural issues down the line.
Okay, so JSUB being the general contractor, they're the ones that the homeowners are going to come to when they see these problems. So what did JSUB do?
Well, you know, to their credit, they fixed the damage, and then they went to their insurance company, U.S. Fire Insurance, and tried to file a claim under their CGL policy, you know, their commercial general liability policy. And that's where the fight started. U.S. Fire said, nope, not covered. They argue that shoddy work by the subs didn't count as an occurrence under the policy, and therefore they weren't obligated to pay for the damages.
So from the insurance company's point of view, it seems like a pretty reasonable stance, right? So this whole thing went to court.
Yeah, it did. At first, the trial court sided with U.S. Fire. They agreed, bad workmanship, not an occurrence.
Okay.
But JSUB appealed that decision, and the appellate court actually reversed the trial court's ruling, saying, hang on, there might be coverage here after all.
Interesting.
And that's how this case ended up in front of the Florida Supreme Court. They had to step in and provide some clarity about what the policy language actually meant in this kind of situation.
Yeah, that makes sense. So basically, the question before the Florida Supreme Court was, does this defective work by a sub that caused damage qualify as an accident or an occurrence, and then also leads to property damage as defined by JSUB's CGL policy? That's a mouthful.
Exactly. It all came down to how you interpret those key terms in the policy. And as I'm sure you know, insurance policies can be tricky to decode.
Yeah.
The stakes were pretty high for everyone involved.
Absolutely. So let's talk about some of this policy language. What is the whole point of a CGL policy to begin with? What kind of protection is it supposed to give to businesses like JSUB?
Well, at its most basic, a CGL policy protects businesses from claims made by third parties, meaning someone other than the business or the insurer. Those claims can be for bodily injury or property damage, but the key is that those injury or damages have to come from the business's operations. So for a contractor like JSUB, their CGL policy is there to cover them if their work, or their sub's work, accidentally causes harm to somebody else or someone else's property.
All right. And the two terms that seem like they're super important here are occurrence and property damage. So how do CGL policies usually define those things?
Yeah, you're right on the money with that. So the standard CGL policy defines an occurrence as an accident, and usually that also covers situations where there's ongoing or repeated exposure to pretty much the same harmful condition. Property damage typically means physical injury to tangible property. It can also include the loss of use of that property if it's been physically damaged. Now, the insurance industry will often say, hey, faulty workmanship, that's just a normal business risk. It's up to the contractor to deal with that, not something the CGL policy is supposed to cover.
Right. I mean, that makes sense, right? You want to make sure that the risks are allocated properly. So how did the changes that they made to CGL policies back in 1986, how did that affect this kind of situation?
Those 1986 revisions really changed the game. They added something called the Products Completed Operations Hazard Clause. This clause covers bodily injury or property damage that happens away from the insured's premises and arises out of the insured's product or work even after that work has been completed or abandoned.
Oh, okay.
But what's really crucial here is that those updates also included a big exception to the Your Work exclusion. And this exception was specifically for work done by subcontractors. See, before 1986, CGL policies were usually interpreted to exclude damage to the contractor's own work. So if a sub messed up, you as the general contractor would have a really hard time getting coverage for that. The 1986 revisions changed all that. They basically acknowledged that liability can pop up after a project is finished. And the subcontractor exception directly addressed the exact scenario that we see in the JSUB case.
Okay, so it sounds like that exception for subs is really a key part of this whole thing. So the JSUB case was really trying to figure out if this specific exception applied to the damage from the poorly compacted soil.
You got it. That was the million-dollar question, right? The heart of the legal fight was whether a sub's defective work that later caused property damage after the project was all wrapped up could actually be covered under this updated policy language. And it all came down to that subcontractor exception.
Right.
And it's important to remember that before those 1986 changes, courts generally didn't interpret CGL policies to cover faulty workmanship. I mean, the standard brief even mentions the LaMarche case, which is a perfect example of how things worked before those updates.
Okay.
LaMarche showed that the courts were much more restrictive in how they approached CGL coverage for construction defects back then. So the JSUB case was a real test of how those new policy provisions would hold up in court.
So let's get to the heart of it. What was the Florida Supreme Court's logic in this case? How did they break down these arguments to decide that there was coverage for JSUB?
Well, their decision really boiled down to three main points. First, they took a close look at that definition of occurrence as an accident. Their thinking was, from JSUB's perspective, the sub's messed up soil work was definitely unintended and unexpected. I mean, yeah, you could say that in construction, you know, maybe some level of poor workmanship is always a risk. But the specific damage that happened in this case, that wasn't something JSUB planned on or caused on purpose.
Okay.
They were making a distinction between foreseeable risks in general and the specific intent behind the damage that actually happened.
Yeah.
The court was basically saying, look, a general contractor has to oversee their subs, but that doesn't mean they're intending or expecting every little mistake a sub might make. And when those mistakes lead to damage, that damage isn't necessarily intentional on the general contractor's part. Then the second big piece of their reasoning was about the definition of property damage. This is where they made a really key distinction. The CGL policy covers damage that is caused by the defective work. So in this case, the cracked walls and foundations. But it doesn't cover the cost of fixing the bad soil itself. That's considered the cost of fixing the faulty workmanship, not damage to other property.
Okay.
It's like if a plumber installs a faulty pipe, right?
Hmm.
The CGL policy might cover the water damage to your drywall and floors, but it wouldn't cover replacing the leaky pipe itself.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. So it's not like a warranty on the quality of the work. It's about the stuff that happens because of that work, right?
You got it. And the third part of their reasoning had to do with the exclusions in the policy. They zeroed in on that your work exclusion, which usually says the contractor's own shoddy work isn't covered. But then they emphasized that super important subcontractor exception. And that exception basically brings back coverage for property damage that's caused by a sub's work. The court was very clear about this. They even pointed out that there weren't any other relevant exclusions in JSUB's policy that would stop coverage in this case. They specifically mentioned the absence of a breach of contract exclusion, which sometimes pops up in these insurance battles.
Interesting. So taking all of that together, the Florida Supreme Court basically said, if a sub does some bad work and it causes damage to the finished project, that can actually be considered an occurrence under the CGL policy, as long as it wasn't intentional or expected.
That's right. They shut down the argument that faulty workmanship could never be an occurrence. They said, look, CGL policies, they're not performance bonds. They're not guaranteeing the quality of the work. But they do cover unintended property damage that happens because of mistakes by subcontractors. And that interpretation is in line with the updated CGL policies, especially with that subcontractor exception from the 1986 revisions.
And the court actually had a direct quote in their opinion that kind of summarizes this whole thing, right? Something about the faulty workmanship not being intended or expected.
Yeah, they said faulty workmanship that is neither intended nor expected from the standpoint of the contractor can constitute an accident and thus an occurrence under a post-1986 CGL policy. I mean, that sentence really gets to the core of their decision.
Okay, now there were also concurring opinions in this case, right?
You're right.
From Justices Lewis and Wells. So what were they thinking?
Yeah, so They both agreed with the final decision, you know, that JSUB's damage was covered. But their reasoning had some interesting wrinkles. Justice Lewis was all about strict textualism. Basically, he said, we just got to stick to the exact words of the policy and not get too bogged down in previous case law.
Okay.
He put a lot of weight on the actual wording of the policy and said any ambiguity should be resolved in favor of the insured because the policy doesn't clearly limit coverage based on the type of property that was damaged.
Okay.
He even said he placed greater emphasis on the plain language of the policy and on resolving any ambiguity in favor of the insured because the policy does not clearly limit coverage by reference to the nature of the damaged property. He was really all about interpreting the contract exactly as it was written.
Okay, and what about Justice Wells?
Justice Wells also agreed with the outcome, but he wanted to highlight something slightly different about the definition of occurrence. He said the real focus should be on whether the damage was unintended, not just whether the sub's work was bad. He felt like that approach made it clear that even though the structural damage came from a mistake that the contractor didn't directly intend, it still fit under the idea of an accident because the damage itself was never something the contractor wanted to happen.
Okay.
And he even said, my approach underscores that the structural damage, although resulting from an error not directly intended by the contractor, fits within the accidental events contemplated by the language of the policy because such damage, though foreseeable in some respects, was never intended.
So even though he agreed about coverage, his logic focused more on the idea that the resulting harm was accidental.
So even though they all agreed on the end result, they had different ways of getting there, right? Different legal paths.
Precisely.
What does that tell us about how judges interpret the law? I think it shows us something really important about how judges approach these issues, especially when you're dealing with contracts like insurance policies.
Yeah.
Different judges can look at the same facts, the same legal language, and come to the same conclusion, but for different reasons. In this case, you see that tension between sticking strictly to the words of the contract and taking a broader view that considers the nature of the damage, the intent behind it. Both approaches can get you to the same place, but the reasoning is different.
That's really interesting. Okay, so now that we've really dug deep into the JSUB case, why is this ruling still so important today? What are the long-term effects that people should know about?
There are a few key reasons why the JSUB case is still relevant. First of all, it provides more clarity for contractors, especially in Florida and any other state that's followed this reasoning. After this ruling, general contractors can feel more confident that their CGL policies will cover them for property damage caused by unintentional and unexpected mistakes made by their subcontractors. That's a big deal in an industry where things can go wrong pretty easily.
Right.
Gives them a safety net. And what about the insurance companies? What did they learn from all this?
Yeah, what about them?
Well, for insurers, JSUB was a big wake-up call about how important it is to be super clear in their policies, especially when they're trying to exclude certain types of coverage.
Okay.
The court made it crystal clear that any ambiguity or vagueness in the policy language is going to be interpreted against the insurer and in favor of the insured getting coverage. So if an insurance company wants to exclude something specific, they got to be precise, no loopholes.
Yeah, makes sense. So this case was also a reminder that the exact words in those policies are crucial for everyone, right?
Absolutely. The JSUB decision really hammered home the point that courts will always look first at the specific language of the policy, especially when those policies have been updated, like with those 1986 CGL revisions. Old case law that dealt with earlier versions of the policy might not be that helpful when the wording has changed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, paying attention to the details of the policy is key.
Okay, so just to be super clear for everyone, the CGL policy, based on this JSUB case, covers the consequences of the bad sub work, the cracked walls and foundations and all that, but it doesn't cover the cost of actually fixing the original problem, the bad soil.
That's it. You nailed it. That's the big distinction to remember.
Okay.
Coverage is for the damage to the finished project, not for going back and fixing the shoddy work that caused the problem.
So big picture, what's the main takeaway for our listeners today?
The bottom line is that the Florida Supreme Court in U.S. Fire Insurance Company versus JSUB Inc. decided that under those post-1986 CGL policies, if a subcontractor does some bad work and that leads to damage, and that damage was unintentional and unexpected, that can be considered an occurrence under the policy and could be covered as property damage.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that works is largely because of that subcontractor exception to the your work exclusion that's in those standard CGL policies.
All right, so there you have it. That is the JSUB case broken down for you. And now we want you to think about this. How do you think this ruling affects the way general contractors and subcontractors think about risk? You know, now that they know insurance might cover some of the damage caused by sub mistakes,
right?
How might that change the way contracts are written or how much insurance coverage people require?
Yeah.
It's something to ponder as you move through your legal studies.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive today. We'll catch you on our next exploration. See you.